Hi, I'm Dan Barber from Blue Hill and Blue Hill at Stone Barns. You are listening to Food Fridays on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Noodles are a food staple all over the world, but for most people, I'd guess that pasta is the standard. It comes in hundreds of shapes and sizes, and there are countless ways to prepare it. So we thought that for this week's Please Explain, we'd find out how it's made and how to cook with it. And joining us are Ron Palladino, a pasta expert, and the Fresh Pasta Counter General Manager at Eataly, and Jack Bishop, Editorial Director of America's Test Kitchen. He has written or edited several cookbooks, including the Pasta Revolution, the Complete Italian Vegetarian Cookbook, and Pasta e Verdura. And I'm very pleased to welcome both of them to our show. Hi.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Leonard.
And we're also inviting our listeners to call in with their thoughts and questions. Our number is 212-433-9692. You can also write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Jack, in 2005, a 4,000-year-old bowl of noodles was discovered in northwestern China. Do we know if pasta originated in China?
Most experts think that pasta did originate in China, and that what we now know of as pasta, which takes so many different shapes, you know, was the 4,000-year-old bowl was filled with something that was made with millet, not with wheat, but it was in the shape that we would recognize as being noodles. And so that's the best evidence we have of the earliest date of pasta. It was a site along the Yellow River in China.
Do we know how long ago people started eating noodles in Italy?
The best evidence is that it actually came from North Africa to Sicily with the Arabs, probably in the 8th or 9th century.
So that's before Marco Polo went to China.
Pretty much everyone now agrees that Marco Polo had nothing really to do with the introduction of pasta to Italy, and that it really came through an Arab influence in either the 8th or 9th century through Sicily. And at that point, they were using durum wheat, which is, you know, the wheat that is used to make what most Americans would recognize as Italian-style pasta, and that it didn't really become widely popular until maybe the 13th or 14th century, which is, I think, where part of the Marco Polo legend must have come into all of this.
Now, Ron, do we know whether they were doing fresh pasta or dried pasta?
Well, the earliest version of pasta that I can find in Italy would be lagane, which is a baked form of pasta rather than it being boiled, and that was layered and baked with meat or fish in the oven.
But, well, that sounds almost like lasagna.
Yeah, that's very similar in names, actually, but it was baked instead. So the earliest version of an actual dried noodle that would then be boiled like pasta is found around 400 A.D.,
Does dry pasta ever go bad? Can you hold on to it for years and years?
I don't think there's any reason to keep dry pasta around long enough for it to go bad. The shelf life is pretty long, so you should really just have enough to get through your immediate needs.
Now, Jack, when we think of pasta, we typically think of Italy. Is there a difference between Italian pasta and the other kinds of noodles? How do udon or spetzel differ? In the end, is it all pretty much the same concept?
Well, I think what generally unifies them is that they're made with some sort of flour and they're not leavened. I think most of the noodles and pastas in the world would probably fall into that category. But the big difference is, you know, what is that flour? Is it a wheat flour? And if so, what kind of wheat flour? Or is it a rice flour? And then in addition, what's the liquid? Is the liquid water? Is it eggs? Is there oil in it? Is there salt or other seasonings that are added? And so that's what gets you the wide variety of fresh and dried pastas that are made pretty much all over the globe now.
Now, Ron, Italian pasta is most often made with semolina flour, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Semolina flour is what gives it that really nice yellow color to it.
And what makes it distinct from other flours?
It's all about the gluten that's inside of it. Semolina has a very, very high gluten content, and that gluten is a hard gluten rather than a tenacious one that would bend and stretch. It's something that would give you more of a resistance to your teeth, where you get that al dente sensation from.
And it's semolina flour is also used in bread.
It is. It makes a very, very good bread. It's it has a little bit more flavor than a white flour would, and it also has a much higher nutritional content. But bread with semolina flour would actually be a little bit sweeter than a traditional bread that you're used to getting.
Is dried pasta made all that differently from fresh pasta?
Well, dried pasta and fresh pasta are made differently and the same. There are a lot of similarities. The semolina flour is only used in dry pasta. So for dry pasta, it's semolina in either water or egg. And for fresh pasta, you can use any type of flour and make any shape that you want. But the semolina flour makes, again, that al dente sensation, and it gives you that really traditional type of pasta that you're used to seeing. So I very rarely see dried pastas that are made out of anything but.
Jack, I have spoken to a number of cookbook writers from Italy, like Marcella Hazan, who are surprised that Americans think that fresh pasta is preferable to dried pasta, because in Italy they don't think that way. They just use differently?
They're used differently. The biggest thing to think about is the textural difference, and then what that means in terms of the sauces. Fresh pasta is very absorbent and, you know, really cooks up fairly soft. I mean, it shouldn't be mushy, but it's not really super al dente, and so it does a great job of soaking up a cream sauce, for instance. And so fettuccine alfredo really should be made with fresh pasta. Dry pastas, they have that great springiness to them, great clingability. They do much better with a tomato-based or an oil-based sauce that can really sort of grab onto those noodles. And it's not a question of quality, it's really just how they are used, and obviously convenience. You know, I would say most of the Italians I know, they eat much more dried pasta than fresh pasta, because they've got dried pasta in their pantry just like we do here in the United States.
And so at the last minute, if you decide you want to have some pasta for dinner, you just go find the package of dried pasta.
There is a little bit of debate between the dry pasta and fresh pasta, which one is better. The major difference is most people agree that the fresh pasta is a little bit easier to digest because it hasn't been dried out fully and it hasn't been held for X amount of time, that the grain in it is a little bit fresher. The product itself is fresher and it hasn't gone through that process, so it's easier for your body to process.
It comes in fewer shapes. How many shapes can we find pasta in?
Literally thousands. From my experience, I don't make it a full day most times without hearing about a new variety of pasta that somebody from Italy is coming to me and asking specifically for. I found that as many words as there are in Italian, there are almost as many pastas.
And I would assume that machinery has made it possible for the manufacturers to make so many different shapes.
Yeah, a lot of pastas were traditionally made only by hand. Things like orecchiette or cavatelle had to be made by hand, but with the advent of modern machinery, you can find both pastas that are produced by machine now. The great thing about doing something that's handmade is on a plate, it looks so much more beautiful because every individual pasta has its own slightly different, unique shape to it.
And a lot of people now can make pastas at home. For a long time, it was with those hand-crank pasta machines. Jack, do we know when they were first invented?
I'm not sure. My grandmother used to use the rolling pin, which was the sort of classic, you know, my Italian grandmother. That's how she would roll out fresh pasta.
Cut it with a knife?
And cut it with a knife into, you know, generally fettuccine or sheets of lasagna or sheets that she would turn into ravioli. It's pretty hard to master. I would say, good at it, but not as good as my grandmother. And I grew up using the two main companies, either Atlas or Imperia, that you see in the United States, that are these hand-cranked machines that clamp onto the counter. And, you know, they really make the rolling much easier. You don't need to wait as long, you know, because of the gluten that's being developed. When you're using the rolling pin, sometimes you've got to stop, let the dough rest, and then roll some more. And the machines allow you to get it really thin. And if you're making, let's say, a folded pasta like a ravioli where there's a double thickness around the edges, you know, getting that fresh pasta really thin is absolutely essential. And the machines give you a higher probability of success than trying to use a rolling pin.
And now we see some of the other kinds of machines available, like KitchenAids have attachments to make fresh pasta.
I'm not a big proponent of any of the electric ones. They haven't convinced me that they're better than the manuals that you clamp on to your counter.
I'm less likely to drop the pasta in the process. The hand crank ones require three hands, as far as I'm concerned.
And a lot of the times, the clip that is provided with the hand crank isn't wide enough to clamp onto your table. So you're left looking for maybe an attachment or a cutting board to clamp it to, and somebody still has to hold the cutting board for you. The earliest I can find that a pasta machine was actually patented was about 1800 in the United States, but the basic pasta machine...
In this country first?
Yeah, 1797, I believe. Don't quote me on the exact date, but I believe that's it.
June 3rd.
Yes, that's beautiful. The basic pasta machine, though, the dough sheeter, which is basically two pins and a crank, is fairly simple, and I have to assume that people were using something like that much further ahead than, you know, that original patent for a mass-produced pasta machine.
My guests are Ron Palladino, pasta expert and fresh pasta counter general manager at Eataly, and Jack Bishop, editorial director of America's Test Kitchen, author and editor of several cookbooks, including The Pasta Revolution, which is published by Boston Common Press, The Complete Italian Vegetarian Cookbook, which is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and Pasta e Verdura, which is published by William Morrow. And we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also write us on our show page at WNYC.org, or you can go to our Facebook page or to Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Let's take a call. We go first to Evie from Paramus. Hi, Evie, you're on the air. Evie, are you there? Okay.
You might have answered my question, but here it is. I lived in Gaeta for a year, and I noticed that when I ate the pasta in Italy, I didn't have the reaction of wheat that I have in this country. And in this country, I noticed that they give you too much pasta, and it's always too wet. And I really enjoyed the pasta that I got in Italy versus that which we get here. So my question is, does durum wheat make it more palatable or at least better to digest?
Thanks. Jack?
First of all, I totally agree that the way pasta is served in Italy is far superior to the way it's served in general in the United States. The portions are smaller, and there's more pasta and less sauce in Italy. In terms of the variety of wheat, most American pasta is being made with the same variety. It's grown in North Dakota, places right over the border in Canada, just north of North Dakota. And, you know, as far as I can tell, there's really no difference in the dried pasta in terms of the ingredients that your big Italian companies are using when they make it in Italy, or Italian or American companies that are making it here in the United States. I mean, for instance, Barilla, which is the number one pasta company in Italy, makes pasta in the U.S. Using U.S. or Canadian-grown wheat. But I'm not sure that the formula is any different than what they're making in Italy.
So what is the trick? Why does pasta taste better in Italy than it does here? You're using salted water.
Yeah. Well, the difference is the philosophy behind the end product. If you ever finish a bowl or plate of pasta and you have sauce left over in the bottom, then it was overdressed. So what you should really be doing is using a little bit of that pasta water that you've used to cook it in your sauce. And as you boil that and finish cooking your pasta in it, the starches in it will naturally thicken it up. And there are a couple standout pastas from Italy that you might have some better luck with. For instance, you can get an feltre pasta, which is made with 100% Italian grain, as opposed to a lot of the Italian producers importing American grain, producing pasta, and then shipping it back. So you might have some better luck with a product like that because the grain would probably be fresher. It hasn't gone across the Atlantic twice.
Well, that pasta water is interesting because Japanese restaurants, soba restaurants, will actually serve you a bowl of the soba water before they serve you the noodles.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it has that also has flavor.
It does. It can actually be used to brew beer. Right now in our birria, we're doing a beer with the leftover pasta water.
Huh.
It actually makes a very, very wonderful beer.
John from Paramus, hi, you're on the air.
Everything in Italy tastes better, but that's beside the point. My mother used to make pasta. She used to use a hanger, the metal from a hanger, to shape the pasta, and she would roll it by hand, and she used that iron. I still remember her shaping pasta with that piece of iron from a coat hanger. But yep. I would like to know, whole wheat pasta, it doesn't taste as good as regular pasta. I wonder why. Is it just... It seems to be much drier and whatnot.
So I think the pasta that you're referring to would have been trofie. So that's a small piece of dough that's then spun around either traditionally the spoke from a bike wheel because it's a little bit thinner than a hanger, but that hanger will still work. And the difference in taste is because of the grain you're being that's being used. I personally do not like whole wheat pasta. I actually find the taste kind of offensive. Even to the point where test batching whole wheat pastas, I was down to about 15 or 20% whole wheat and 80% semolina, and that flavor was still overpowering.
And Jack, what are your feelings about whole wheat pastas?
It has a bad reputation, and it probably deserves some of that in the sense that many of the whole wheat pastas, either the texture is just awful, it's mushy and isn't cooking up al dente, and I'm thinking about, you know, dried whole wheat pastas, or the bigger problem is that they have an odd, sour, bitter flavor. That said, last year at America's Test Kitchen, we tested about 10 different brands, and we were pleasantly surprised by an Italian brand, Bio Nature, their whole wheat spaghetti, which is 100% whole wheat. You know, it had that kind of weedy, nutty, buttery notes that you want in regular dried pasta. Had a nice firm texture. You know, I think you have to be careful about what kind of sauce you serve it with. It has a little bit more character than your regular dried pasta, and so it would work well with bitter greens, for instance. Not so sure it works really well with a butter and cream sauce, where it might be just the pasta probably has too much personality. But if you haven't tried the Bio Nature, which you can get in most American supermarkets, and you're interested in 100% whole wheat, that's the best one, I think, to try.
We're going to go to a little break now on this week's Please Explain look at pasta and related noodles. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org. on Facebook or on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. My guests are Jack Bishop, who's the editorial director of America's Test Kitchen and author and editor of several cookbooks, including The Pasta Revolution, The Complete Italian Vegetarian Cookbook, and Pasta e Verdura. And Ron Palladino is a pasta expert and fresh pasta counter general manager at Eataly. We'll be back with more right after this. And we are back with Jack Bishop, editorial director of America's Test Kitchen, author of several books, or editor of them, cookbooks including Pasta Revolution, The Complete Italian Vegetable Cookbook, and Pasta e Verdura. And also with us is Ron Palladino, who is the Fresh Pasta Counter General Manager at Eataly, where you can find all things Italian. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can pledge online at WNYC.org. And we're getting a lot of calls and also a lot of people writing in. Maybe I should ask a couple of these questions. Jack from Staten Island called in to say that growing up in a Jewish American family in the 50s, all they ate was spaghetti with Heinz ketchup. He only ate pasta officially when he was 20 years old. But didn't you mention that... that somebody in Italy, that was Danny Meyer. He said earlier he cooked pasta at a French restaurant, and all of the people on the staff put ketchup on it. And this was in France when he was doing a staff meal.
Now, I've definitely heard of these things happening before. I know that a lot of Asian cultures, too, will put ketchup on their pasta as the sauce. I personally have never tried it. I can't comment how good it is or how not good it is, but I'm happy that he finally got around to trying the authentic way.
Let's go to another call. This one is from Jordan from Manhattan. Hi, Jordan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Go ahead.
My mother was diagnosed with celiac disease several years ago. My wife comes from a very gifted family of Italian-American cooks. I'm a naturalized Italian-American. And, you know, we cook pasta for her. We've experimented with the corn-based pastas as well as corn, you know, hybridized with something else. But was really wondering how that lack of gluten affects the way it binds with sauces and the way it cooks up and generally, you know, how to cook for our mother.
Jack?
I'm going to give you a sneak peek. We haven't actually published these results, but we did a tasting about a month ago of about 10 different brands of gluten-free dried pasta. And this is one of those cases where we thought there was a clear winner. We had corn pastas, we had rice pastas, quinoa pastas, and the winner was actually a brand called Jovial, J-O-V-I-A-L, and it's a brown rice-based pasta. And there were, I got to say, a lot of skeptics on the tasting panel, and I wouldn't say it fooled us, but it was surprisingly close to what you might expect from wheat pasta. So if you haven't tried that brand, you might try Jovial. It's available in a lot of supermarkets and felt like it was the best of the choices out there.
How many non-wheat pastas do you offer at Eataly?
At the fresh pasta counter, we have two most times, and the dried products can vary depending on our supply chain. But you can look into things like spelt or even kamut flour. Now, kamut isn't gluten-free. It's very low gluten, and a lot of people will find that they actually don't have the celiac disease. They have a gluten intolerance, and that reaction is really to the gluten that has turned rancid in the flour from being so old and being milled so far in advance. So if you are having problems and you haven't been diagnosed with celiac disease, you should really try getting fresh flour and making pasta for yourself and seeing how it goes. Now, I wouldn't recommend doing that, you know, before you go into work in the morning, just in case you do have a slight reaction to it. Maybe try it on a Saturday or Sunday and see how you react to it.
A listener wonders about whether there are certain shapes that take to certain sauces better than others.
A great saying that I just recently came across was, the death of spaghetti is tomato. So there are definitely specific combinations where the sauce and the pasta have ideal matches. Another great one, which is my personal favorite,
but the death of spaghetti.
So,
but most people serve spaghetti with a meat.
Exactly.
With a
it's more of an
sauce.
Ironic saying, like, if you really want to kill this spaghetti and make it the best it possibly can be, then it should be with a tomato sauce. But gnocchi with pesto sauce to me is amazing, because you have that astringency of the fresh garlic and the basil in the pesto, and then that creamy gnocchi, and it just balances so well.
Is gnocchi considered a pasta?
I absolutely consider it a pasta, but it's in its own separate category of a little dumpling. From my research, I've actually found that the gnocchi came along a little bit before like a spaghetti or something like that, because it was just a flour and water dumpling. And it was an all-purpose flour. It didn't need to be semolina.
Do you consider gnocchi a pasta, Jack?
Yeah, I think, you know, dumplings are a subset of the big world of pasta and noodles. And, you know, they contain flour. Yes, they also contain potato, but, you know, there's semolina gnocchi where the ingredients are even closer. Now, the form isn't really very similar to dried pasta, but it's definitely pasta, and certainly the way it's cooked, you know, it's boiled and sauced, so I think that makes it a pasta.
Now, there are stuffed pastas like ravioli and tortellini. Cheese is a standard filling, but you see pretty much anything as a potential filling. Are there certain sauces that serve ravioli best, the ones that won't overpower the filling?
Well, personally, I think that, you know, if you've got a filling, whether it's a cheese-based or it's got vegetables, I think that a butter sauce is always the simplest, best thing to serve with ravioli or any stuffed pasta. And, you know, you might want to brown the butter just a little bit, but I like to keep it simple, not a lot of sauce. I don't really love to see ravioli under a sea of tomato sauce. Seems like you can't really appreciate the pasta, and that a butter sauce, just a couple tablespoons of a butter sauce, you know, very lightly coats the pasta and is probably going to work well with the cheese, the spinach, whatever else may be inside the tortellini or the ravioli.
Is putting some Parmesan on the top absolutely necessary?
I think that's more of a cook's choice. I mean, food in general is always about balance, and pasta is a great example of that. So if you were to put a tomato sauce on a meat-filled pasta, your end sensation is basically going to be spaghetti and meatballs. So if you can dress it lightly with a little bit of butter and maybe a touch of nutmeg in that meat-filled pasta, then you're going to showcase all the hard work that somebody's put into it.
A listener writes, when I cook ravioli, it sometimes falls apart. Is there a way to prevent that?
I think with ravioli, the biggest mistake people make is that they treat it like dried pasta, where basically you want the water at a rolling boil. When I'm cooking ravioli, I bring the water to a boil, but then as soon as the ravioli goes in, I turn it down because I don't want the violent churning of the water to blow apart the pasta. And so, you know, you want to keep it just below that stage so that it's obviously cooking quickly, but that you're not causing the pasta to blow apart. And then don't drain it. You know, if you have 4 quarts of water and you drain the whole thing into a big colander, there's a lot of pressure that's being exerted on that ravioli. Use a slotted spoon, you know, a mesh strainer or something to scoop the pasta out of the pot rather than dumping the contents of the pot into a colander.
We are going to take a call now from Kathleen from Fort Greene. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi there, Leonard. How are you?
I'm well.
Great.
Eating a lot of
great
pasta these days?
About pasta. I wanted to ask, we were talking about the ingredients in the pasta, but what about the water? And does that make a difference in how pasta tastes in different places, the way they say water affects bagels in New York, for example? And also, people salt water sometimes when they cook pasta. Is that a good thing to do?
So you should never put salt in the actual dough of the pasta. All of the seasoning should come from the water. And if you go to a culinary school or any professional kitchen, they'll always tell you to salt the water so it tastes of the sea. It should taste exactly like ocean water. And don't be nervous that you're putting all that salt in there, because the majority of it is not going to cook into the pasta. The majority of it's going to stay in the water, but the seasoning should always come from the water. And then in the sauce, you really don't need to add any salt either, because you're going to be using a touch of that water.
Now, Jack, Harold McGee wrote an article in the New York Times some years ago in which he suggested that the idea that we cook pasta in a huge amount of water isn't necessarily the best way, that as long as you cook enough, use enough water to cover the pasta, that will be perfectly fine. Do you agree?
If you're going to be vigilant, we've actually done some tests with, you know, using 1.5 or 2 quarts of water for a pound of pasta. And you can get good results, but one of the main reasons why the classic recommendation is, you know, 4 quarts of water for a pound of pasta is that it gives you more room for the pasta, so it's less likely to stick together, in the sense that if you're not going to be vigilant about stirring. But, you know, there can be some good things about doing a small amount of water. If you're going to be using that cooking water, as Ron was saying, for seasoning, or helping getting the sauce to cling, you know, if you cook it in half as much water, then that water is very starchy and can be very well seasoned, and that can be a benefit for certain kinds of sauces. You know, if you're trying to make cacio e pepe, you know, pecorino and black pepper, I actually generally try to cook that in as little water as I can, because I'm going to use a fair amount of that water in the sauce. And so I like it to be as starchy and as well seasoned as possible.
Do you think Americans like their pasta better, more well done than Italians do?
I'm not sure if they like it that way or if it's just the product of the situation from overcooking it. So I actually choose to make my pasta with only semolina flour, no all-purpose flour. So that extra gluten in there from the semolina flour actually gives you a much bigger window for that pasta having the al dente sensation. So you can overcook it a little bit more and it'll be more forgiving.
There's a DJ from Aberdeen wrote in wondering if the pasta in Italy tastes better because American pasta is made with wheat that's genetically modified.
That is definitely a complicated question, especially when you get into things like farmers' crops being pollinated by other farmers' crops, and one is genetically modified and the other's not. So it's very hard to keep track of what is and what isn't genetically modified. Whenever possible, obviously, go for the stuff that you know isn't. The stuff in Italy hasn't been modified nearly as much as the stuff in the United States. So if you have access to it, it probably will be a better product.
You have any thoughts on that, Jack?
You know, if you're talking about the big brands, I don't really see, in a blind taste test, much difference between the brands made in Italy and the brands made in the United States. Now, if you're talking about boutique brands that you can get in Italy, I think that's a different question. But if we're talking about, you know, Barilla, for instance, or DiCecco, they're fine pastas, but a lot of the similar pastas that are being made with American wheat by American companies, You know, I think it's much more how you cook it and how you sauce it than the actual choice of the pasta when you're talking about mass market brands.
We go now to Stefan from North Carolina. Hi, Stefan. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you doing?
We're well.
Good. I was just saying that my fiance can't have any grains, and sadly we haven't had pasta naturally in a very long time, and we've just sort of grown away from it. But I'm wondering if the guests have any experience with grain-free pastas. I heard the last caller, a couple callers ago, asked about gluten-free pastas and the supplement to that.
I actually do not have much experience working with flours that aren't gluten-free for the simple reason that it have to be made in a completely separate production facility. If I were to try and do gluten-free where I work now, there would be cross-contamination. So I haven't had a chance to experiment on that nearly as much as I would like.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, grain-free pasta, I got to say, I'm going to plead ignorance on that one, too, that seems like that's a whole other world of noodles that I'm not terribly familiar with either.
People have been writing, and Sarah from Manhattan asks, can your guest explain the origin of the name Stroza Prete, or priest choker?
Yeah, that's definitely a funnier one. The story, as best I understand it, is for a while, Italians were strangling priests, and the shape of this pasta directly resembles the bootlaces from the shoes that they were using to strangle them. There's a lot of great stories like that about pasta, though, like garganelle. It actually looks like the esophagus of a cat's throat. And the story behind that is an Italian woman was having some very distinguished guests over, and either the cat ate the filling for her tortellini, so she was left with the squares, or they showed up with too many people, so she had to improvise a new shape and ended up rolling these little squares that were supposed to be tortellini around a dowel, and there you have garganelle.
Jim in Bedford-Stuyvesant asks, what's the perfect definition of al dente?
I think you should bite into the pasta every minute or so when you think it's halfway done. And as soon as the noodle is completely transparent on the inside and you don't see a line of raw flour, you're there. The pastas in general have probably about a minute, minute and a half window where you're going to get that al dente sensation without overcooking it, but you really have to be vigilant. You have to not boil the water too strong and just watch it.
Jack, is couscous a pasta?
Yes, it is.
Although it feels like a grain.
It looks like a grain, but it's made with the same ingredients. It's semolina-based, and it is, it is technically a pasta that is simply, shaped by hand traditionally, and obviously now most of what we buy in the supermarket is made by machine, but it is a pasta.
A listener asks if either of you if both of you have favorite go-to pasta recipes that you're willing to share.
I definitely do. I could share a couple of them, actually. If you want to try and make pasta at home and you want to make a nice handmade pasta, then the numbers you should remember are 1,450. I try and bake every recipe down into something simple like that. So the 1,000 is 1,000 grams of durum flour. The 400 grams is water, and there's 50 grams of olive oil in there. You're going to find that dough comes together a lot easier if you use a nice warm water. It's going to absorb into the flour a lot more readily. And to make cavatelli, you want the pasta to be a little bit chewy, so that warm water will also help develop the gluten. Cavatelli, again, for sauces is amazing because it's so versatile. In the summertime, I like to do it actually with rock shrimp that I poach in butter and a little bit of fresh chopped escarole folded in at the end. So you get this nice sweet shrimp and butter and that bitter escarole, which is amazingly balanced.
And Jack, you have written a number of cookbooks. Do you have a favorite recipe?
I'm going to give you a current. I mean, and I'm at the risk of being overly trendy. I'm going to talk about what seems to be the ingredient of the moment, which is kale. Seems like, raw kale is everywhere, and I have a good use for raw kale. Think about using it as a base for a pesto. It's actually really delicious. The bitterness of the kale can work really nicely, especially with maybe some parsley supplemented. With it, I might add some toasted walnuts, a little bit of hot red pepper flakes. And you don't need to cook the kale. You just grind it as you would basil in a food processor. And it's a surprisingly interesting base for a pesto sauce. And that if you're somebody who wants to be eating raw kale, but you're not sure you're a rabbit and want to be eating it as is, this is a way to eat raw kale without having to chew those tough leaves.
Thank you both so much for being with us today on this Please Explain. Jack Bishop is editorial director of America's Test Kitchen, author and editor of a number of cookbooks, including The Pasta Revolution, published by Boston Common Press, The Complete Italian Vegetarian Cookbook, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, Pasta e Verdura, published by William Morrow. Ron Palladino is the Fresh Pasta Counter General Manager at Eataly, which is on 23rd Street, between 23rd and 24th.
Right on 23rd and 5th Avenue.
On 5th Avenue, and you'll find an awful lot of pastas there. Thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.